Welcome to episode 6 of the City of Champions podcast. My name is Edgar and I'm joined here by my co-host, Gene. In this episode, we take a look at the Dodgers' intense series against the Padres, the Lakers' win over the Jazz, and we discuss the week ahead. What's up, everyone? Thanks again for joining us for your episode 6 of the City of Champions podcast. Lots to talk about today. Crazy series down in San Diego. Game 1, 12-run marathon. Game 2, Mookie's catch. Game 3, Bauer's well-pitched game, but unfortunate loss. What you think overall of this weekend's games?
Just an overall great series. We talked about on episode 5, you asked me what I was looking for, and I said a competitive series. We got that. I said a tense series, we got that. I said some shit talking, we definitely got that. I said some dugouts clearing, we got that twice. It was everything I was looking for, maybe a little bit too much. I feel like super stressed after that series, man. Every game was very tense, but it was fun, man. It was really fun to just have some real competitive baseball after kind of cruising through the first few series of the season. So going into San Diego and playing a tough 3-game series against the Padres was much needed.
Yeah, you know, and the intensity was definitely there, like you said. It felt like October, you know, it felt like a playoff game, like a National League Championship Series game. And that's rare for, you know, the regular season, especially against a team like San Diego. Granted, this year they've got a much better squad lineup. There's cause for the rivalry for the intensity. Let's start with game one. Bueller, great game. Not a gem like he's, you know, accustomed us to, but still a very solid game, giving up 7 hits, 2 earned runs, only 1 walk on 4 Ks, but it was a marathon. It was a marathon that went into the 12th inning. What were your reactions for that game, Gene?
Well, first, shout out to the young rookie, Luke Rayleigh, getting his first major league home run. That was a cool moment. It's always cool to see someone get their first hit or first home run. So that was cool. As you mentioned, Bueller was, he didn't pitch bad, man. 6 innings, 2 earned runs. That's not a bad start in any way, shape, or form. He did give up that Tatis bomb in the 5th. But it just didn't seem like he had his best stuff. It kind of just seemed like he was constantly working through a little bit of trouble here, a little bit of trouble there. But this, like you said, man, this game was just a marathon, man. 12 innings, just a long game. So many highs, so many lows, like up and down and up and down the whole game. We take the lead in the 6th. We were able to score 3 runs. Tatis made that error. We were able to get some runs in there. So we take the lead 4-2 and we kind of just give it back. And just that's kind of the whole game. It was just quite exhausting.
It was. And, you know, both teams had 3 errors that game. So it just goes to show that it was not the best game. Tatis, like you said, he kept messing up. He's still a rookie. He's still a young kid. And he's going to learn how to not make those mistakes. You know, overall, though, I was disappointed with Knebel's, you know, pitching. It kind of came out of nowhere. Same with Jansen. Both those guys just kind of screwed up the end of the game.
Well, hold on, bro. Slow up, dog. Knebel, you can't say Knebel's performance was like Jansen. Knebel, his worst performance this year, wasn't sharp, gave up 3 hits, 2 runs. San Diego's tied the game. Jansen comes in and gets him out of the jam, right? Jansen comes back and he gets Tatis to pop out. He strikes out Cronenworth. He walks Machado. Machado's still second, but he would have been out if Seager holds on to the ball. That was a good throw by Smith. He had him out. So I'm not going to get so hard on Jansen. He did then throw a ball in the dirt and the Hosmer hits a soft ground ball. You know, but it's, I don't know. I'm not going to be so hard on Jansen about that performance. I thought he was okay. I just thought Seager, again, like the middle infield, man, it's just little mistakes that should have been an out, that should have been game right there. Let's talk about Santana, man. Like, I felt like that was the best part of the game, the 10th inning, where he hits, hit by pitch, Mateo. And then Mateo is walking to first base and he starts staring, Dennis Santana down, and you know Dennis Santana ain't no punk, so he starts like walking towards him, and they're chirping back and forth, and then the bench is clear, right? And so it gets super tense, and Santana's looking to scrap, dog. I like that. I like what a pitcher ain't scared. Like, what up, dog? I'm right here. Let's throw down if you're really about that life. But then eventually, you know, bench is clear, dugout's clear. That it eventually calms down or whatever. You know, everyone goes back into their dugouts. And then he gets Tatis, bro. Striking out Tatis with that nasty slider.
Huge.
Locks him up. Strikes him out looking, bro. He's hyped. Dodger fans are hyped because those bases loaded at this point. It's bases loaded, two outs. You got this, you know, one of the, you know, faces of Major League Baseball up in the box, and he locks him up, bro, with a nasty slider to strike him out, and everyone's just lit.
Yep, it was, man, it was a crazy game, and it really felt like it was going into 18 innings.
Yeah.
That's how long. Maybe it's because it was a late, you know, night game. I think it went to like 12, but it definitely it kept you entertained from, you know, beginning to end, especially in those in the extra innings. So great game, great way to start the series. You know, great way to really set the tone for what was to come later on, which leads us into game two and the GOAT. And I'll say it again, the GOAT. Because game after game, he just keeps putting up these types of performances. I mean, remember, this is a guy who's supposed to be washed, old, and he's delivering Cy Young performances. Another shutout. Was that his third shutout of the year?
It was. I mean, I don't know what number shutout it is, man. But he's been on a roll, man. He had that rough opening day start against the Rockies. But besides that, man, he's been rolling, man. It was a great start. Six innings, two hits, no earned runs. Two walks, eight Ks on 98 pitches. You're right, man. He, you know, we've been giving him in a lot of, you know, Dodger fans been giving him a lot of crap about, you know, and a lot of people in baseball saying he might be washed. He's not the same. He's looking good to start the season, man. Slider is looking sharp. Fastball was, you know, a little tick faster than what it's been to start the season. You know, in the sixth inning, he was working at about 92, which is a little bit faster than what he normally, you know, throws it at. But what'd you think about that that fourth inning catcher interference call with Profar?
I thought it was bananas. This guy was like, I don't even know what it was. If it was like a check swing that he just decided to commit to very, very last second after not committing to it. But it was definitely a very, very late swing. Even, you know, the replay showed how the ball was already in Barnes's glove when he kind of like came around and like hit it. So I don't know. That was really awkward. First time I've ever seen it in my life. Rightly called. I don't think it should have been a review by any means. I think Kershaw was right to be angry because you're wasting people's time. And not everything really should merit a replay, especially a play like that, especially a play where someone watching it on TV somewhere can tell you, no, that is not a good swing. That is a late swing.
So wait, so here was my thing on that whole play, right? It's catcher interference. And what is the really the rule of catcher interference is that the catcher's glove is impeding the player's swing from being able to make contact with the ball. Am I right on that? Is that like a good definition of like the rule? Basically, the catcher's glove, and while I'm in my swing, the catcher's glove is preventing me from getting to the baseball. Right?
Right.
That makes sense. The ball was already in Barnes's glove, like you said. The ball was already past Profar. He's not hitting that ball. That's strike three. He literally just flung his bat at the glove to get an interference call. So my irritation a little bit is with the umpire crew, the umpire crew, and they were hot garbage this whole series. This umpire crew is by far probably the worst I've seen in baseball. Horrible. But this specific play, this is like where the review like system kind of annoys me. It's you go to review and you still get the call wrong. Like you go to review and yeah, the bat hits the glove, but you can't see that the ball's already in the catcher's glove at that point. You already literally, you rung him up, strike three, then he hits the glove and then it's like, oh, it's interference. Like Kershaw said, it was a bullshit swing. I agree.
But, you know, it is what it is. Kind of a cheap play by them. Didn't really affect the game too much. But, you know, really just impressed. Again, going back to Kershaw, he pitched well. But let's also give it up for Yu Darvish, who he had his on lock. And if it wasn't for that bases loaded walk by Kershaw, who, again, batted his own run in.
Hey, Kershaw don't need a DH, bro. Kershaw has his own DH.
That's right. But let's not take it away from Darvish because he pitched just as good as, if not better than Kershaw.
Yeah, he was great, bro. He was filthy.
9 strikeouts, 7 innings pitched. That's the kind of game you hate to lose because you pitch so well. And against any other team, it would be, you know, a shutout. But, you know, he lost.
And that one run we scored in the fifth, bro, that was a 2-out rally. We were 2 outs. He hits McKinstry, single by the rookie Rayleigh. Barnes gets a walk. And then Kershaw works a walk, bro. And that's the first run we get. So nice little 2-out rally by the Dodgers.
Exactly, yeah. And so, you know, timely hitting again by the Dodgers and by Kershaw, you know, getting the job done. Anything else stand out to you during that game?
Let's go to the ninth, bro. And, you know, Trinan comes in. You know, Trinan worked the 8. Did a great job. He comes back for the 9th. He K's Machado. Just filthy. Filthy sinker. Filthy slider. K's Machado. Gonzalez comes in. Myers hits a single. And then wild pitch, Myers advances. Then we get a fielder's choice. So then we have runners on second and third. And then Mookie with the catch of the year so far, bro. Mookie Betts, I believe it was Tommy Pham, hits a screamer into the gap, you know, the right center gap. Mookie's playing center field, so he's playing out of position, gets a great jump, lays out, bro. And that ball is literally like, it's not even like a snow cone, bro. It's like coming out of like the heel of the glove. And like as he's sliding, he tucks it back away, bro, like to secure the catch. And that's it, bro. That's the game winning catch right there. That was an amazing play. What were your thoughts on that catch by Mookie, bro?
I was angry, man. I was angry that it was number 2 on ESPN's top 10.
What the hell was number 2? What was number 1?
It was a football game. I'm not sure if it was high school or college, but he was getting tackled and he kind of just like threw the ball up into the end zone, and one of his guys just happened to catch it.
Whoa, slow.
It was.
Hold on. Did you just say high school football was the
something
number
like
one
that
play on SportsCenter's top 10? High school football over Mookie Betts?
Something like that, man. It was crazy. And I'm just like, what's number one? Like, what? This is like the catch of the year.
Be
way better ESPN. Like, come on. So I was kind of upset that it got number 2. If you look at the, you know, someone ran all the other metrics on that. If you look at the improbability of him catching that, I think it was like 10% that he would catch it. And you look at how much he covered in such a short amount of time. And then you look at the full extension and how the ball hits the lip of the glove. Manages to stay in the glove, and then Mookie manages to squeeze it so it doesn't come out of the glove. And then to make, you know, things even way better, he just gets up and starts beating his chest.
Hyped, dude. He was hyped.
Just gets hyped.
I was hyped.
And you know, every Dodger fan was doing something similar, celebrating in some way with the same intensity as Mookie was when he was beating his chest. Man, it was the play of the year so far, in my opinion. It saved a game. It was the difference between a tie game and going into extra innings and then, you know, just walking off winning the game in spectacular fashion. You know, hearing from people on Twitter, on other podcasts, I guess, everything just went quiet. You know, they had the guy on TV when the camera was panning. He just looked shocked.
Yeah.
And it was the greatest thing ever. It was beautiful. It was the kind of game I like to watch. Again, October type energy.
Yeah, definitely great, man. Let's hit this third game. So we're recording this on Sunday. So the game just ended. We did take the L, lost 5-2. Trevor Bauer was on the hill, but he was dealing, man. 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run. He gave up that bomb to Cronenworth. 1 walk, 7 Ks on 98 pitches. Tell me a little bit of what you liked from Bauer in his start today.
He was dominant. I mean, you know, not a lot of walks, not a lot of hits over 6 innings and a lot of strikeouts and kept it under 100 pitches. So I'm not really too mad at him. For anyone who watched the game, they know what happened. That game sort of went out the window, you know, late, and it was way after, you know, he was already out. So he did what he had to do. He put us in a position to win. We should have won this game, and to blow it, and for him not to get the W, it sucks. And, you know, we can blame the umpires, but they were consistently horrible for both sides, yeah. Which is even worse, you know, because then it's like infuriating to everyone, not just to one or the other. So, yeah, those are my reactions. He was on. He brings the intensity every game. But, you know, the bullpen, let's talk about that. That's really where the game went out the window.
It was very clear today. You know, so Gratterall, who was just activated from the injured list, gets the 7th. So he hasn't pitched yet, bro. He hasn't pitched in spring training. This is legit his first spring training outing, essentially. And he's thrown into a 2-1 game right? He's thrown into a 2-1 game in the seventh inning to hold. So once I saw that, I immediately was like, okay, Dave Roberts don't really care if we win this game or lose this game. He's kind of saving his bullpen arms. And he's going to kind of just throw the lower end bullpen arm. So, and he does exactly what he does. He throws in Gratterall, who gives up a leadoff single, RBI double. He gets the strikeout, you know, but he leaves the game with runners on first and third. Alexander comes in, gets the ground out. So Alexander takes on the eighth. And so the eighth inning is where the lead is lost, right? It was 2-2. And then in the eighth inning, Alexander starts the eighth and he gets a ground out by Profar to Corey Seager. And he botches the throw, man. Error, which allows him to get on. Then Dennis Santana comes in and Profar will eventually come around to score on Hosmer's RBI single. And then Pham has a 2-run double. And then eventually we lose. I believe we lost, 5-2. And so, but, you know, it is what it is. Like, we lost the game. I'm not going to, like, dwell on it too much. But I've been saying it, bro. Like, every pod, I feel like I keep saying the same thing. Like, the one criticism I have about the Dodgers is the middle infield defense. It continues. Like, Seager had a missed tag this series. He had this botched throw today that led to a run scoring that could have ended the inning. We could have gone into the ninth tie 2-2, still been in the game. McKinstry threw a ball away on a double play ball. And so it's just something I just want them to clean up is that middle infield defense. But it is what it is, man. We won the series. We both predicted that we'd win the series two out of three. And that's what we did. We had the chance to sweep. We didn't get the sweep. No big deal. Moving on.
You know, moving forward, we've got the next two games against Seattle. And then we're back at Dodger Stadium against San Diego. So I'm looking forward to both of those two series. Not really sure what to expect out of the Mariners. We don't play them often. We've never played them very often. It should be interesting. But yeah, I mean, looking forward to next weekend, another big series against San Diego. We're going to see more of, again, the same starters, but we're also going to see, you know, new pitchers.
Yeah, we might get Musgrove. I'm thinking for that forward game series, man, we more than likely will see Darvish again, Snell again, and Musgrove, which is a little bit, I mean, I'm not concerned or anything like, well, I'm a little concerned. Because we just didn't hit the ball well this series, man. Like, we really didn't. So I just kind of broke down the stats from some of our top hitters this series. So check it out. Corey Seager, 1-for-13. Mookie Betts, 2-for-13. Max Muncy, 1-for-12. Justin Turner, 4-for-12. So he had a good series. Smith, 1-for-6. Taylor, 2-for-13. And then McKinstry, another good series, 4-for-10. But those are our top seven hitters, right? Our top seven hitters went 14-for-79. That's a 177 average. And so we could have very easily, man, honestly lost this series. And so just hoping to see when we get them again for that four-game series and with Joe Musgrove coming to pitch, more than likely that our bats will have a better performance.
We've been performing at such a high level these past, you know, couple weeks that you're going to get one of those games where you just do terrible. You're going to get one of those series where you just don't hit well. And we were lucky to win two out of those three games in this series. So I expect a lot more out of them the next go around. They've seen the pitchers. They've seen Yu Darvish. They've got a feel for the game, for the lineup. So it should be a lot more strategic, but a lot more open as well. You know, there's going to be more swinging going on with guys knowing what to expect out of pitchers, the kind of movement their pitches have. You know, it's only 3-4 days removed between series, so not much is going to happen.
Good thing we get a break with the Mariners, bro, because having to play the Padres again now for a 4-game series in LA, it's going to be intense again, man. And so we definitely need like a little break with the Mariners before we go back to this October-like intensity.
For now, the focus is Seattle, taking care of them, and then going into the San Diego series and really, you know, putting our foot down. It's going to be a big series, and splitting that series to me would be a failure. We've got to go at least 3-1, if not 4-0.
We're not winning 4-0, bro. We're not winning 4-0.
Hey, Dodgers in four, man. Never say never.
I was going back and forth with people on Twitter about that. The Padres are good, man. Like, I get, like, we want to talk all the shit against the Padre fans and we want to, like, sun them and little bro them or whatever. And I get that. But they're good. Like, they're a very good baseball team. They have a deep starting rotation. They have a deep bullpen. I think we split. It's going to be a tough series, man. We're definitely not going to. If we swept all four games, that would be incredible. But I just don't see that happening.
Looking forward to another great series. We'll be back as soon as that wraps up. Now on to the Lakers.
All right, City of Champion podcast listeners, it's time to talk about your Los Angeles Lakers. We had a game yesterday against the Utah Jazz, and we were able to get that W, got that win. We won 127 to 115. It did go to overtime, but it was overall a great game. Edgar, hit me with your initial thoughts on this game, bro.
I can't believe we got Andre Drummond on the buyout market.
Talk to me some more about Drummond, man. What'd you see? What'd you like?
Everything, man. I mean, we were critical of him when he wasn't performing well first few games. But again, like I said earlier in the podcast, he's out of shape. He hasn't played basketball in months. Wait till he gets going. And he got going this game specifically. And his stat line is just crazy to me. I mean, 27 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, plus 18, 7 of 8 from the free throws. And I think it was 10 of 15 from the field. Those are efficient numbers. 66% shooting. And then 7 of 8 from free throws. That's what really comes to mind during this game. Now, Schroeder played well. He played really well, especially in that fourth quarter. But Drummond was a standout performance for me. That was, you know, the really good positive thing to see as far as, you know, the teams matching up. Everyone was injured. So I wasn't really looking at that. I was, you know, more looking at individual performances and how players were going. And I'm happy by what Drummond did.
Yeah, you touched on the injuries, man. Utah sat Gobert, they sat Conley, they sat Derek Favors, and then Mitchell is out with that ankle sprain. He'll be out for a while. So you're right. It was kind of like the battle of like the role players. The game started off just hot shooting on both sides. Drummond and Schroeder were both very aggressive. And then KCP kind of gets his groove going, and he hit 5 of 8 from the 3-point line in the first half. And so the first half was just all offense. And then we go to the third quarter, and then we pick up the defensive intensity on our end, and we outscored the Jazz that quarter 29-20. Drummond has a great quarter. Lakers defense is locked in. Jazz cooled off. We were able to open up a 12-point lead because we shot 65% in that quarter, and the Jazz just shot 38%. So in my head, I'm thinking, all right, we're cruising to this win. Jazz are kind of gassing out. We're putting our foot on the gas pedal. So it's just, you know, let's roll to this easy W. But that wasn't the case because the fourth quarter, the Jazz come out, and initially, like, they didn't come out hot. You know, we're up 13 at the 10-minute mark. And then we went ice cold. We go on a scoring drought for 6.5 minutes. And the Jazz slowly start chipping away. Their defense, the Jazz defense starts to tighten up on us. They go to like this little kind of soft zone that gives us trouble. And they're slowly chipping away. And then eventually at the 4.5-minute mark, they take the lead. They went on a 15-0 run and they take the lead. And so eventually they're up 3 with 2 minutes to grow, with 2 minutes to go. The game kind of locks up in, you know, those last 2 minutes. I was a little disappointed in, I mean, yes, Dennis Schroeder played well, man. But I do have one criticism on Dennis Schroeder. I was a little disappointed on the fact that he took a 3-pointer. We had the ball. There was 26 seconds left in the game. At this point, I believe we were up 1. Yeah. We were up 1. And then he takes a 3 with 26 seconds left in the game. There was 13 seconds left on the shot clock. He could have easily worked that down a little bit lower. He didn't even try to get to the rim. He settled for the 3-pointer. He could have easily worked that clock down, tried to get to the rim, and then leave the Jazz with, like, you know, after they collect the rebound, you know, 13, 14 seconds left in the game. But the Jazz get the rebound. They call a timeout. They set up a nice play, a little pick and roll. Clarkson pops and hits a 3. But then Schroeder eventually comes back and ties the game on a layup. So very intense, like, end of the fourth quarter. Then we go to OT and we kind of just pull away in overtime. And we win the period 17-5. And we were just kind of dominating. We pulled away easily. we did kind of like a little bit sloppy in overtime, and we were a little bit sloppy and allowed Utah to kind of hang around. But yeah, man, great performances, like you said, by Drummond. Great performances by Schroeder. Let's not leave out the homie KCP. It's great to kind of see him get going. He had 25 points, 5 3-pointers, 5 rebounds, 2 steals. This was a huge win. This was a huge win for us because last time we talked, you thought we'd be able to take at least one of the games. I thought we would lose both to the Jazz. Even with Mitchell out, I thought we were going to lose both. Obviously, with Gobert and Favors and Conley sitting out, that helps our chances. But still a huge win, man, especially right now where we're playoff seeding and every game counts and the standings and all of that is important right now. So, yeah, man. Any additional thoughts on that game?
A key win. Again, we needed that win. Not, you know, the fact that we're 5-5 the last 10 without LeBron AD is ridiculous to me, just because we shouldn't be 5-5. We should be like 2-8. But glad that, you know, those guys worked hard and pulled it off. Kind of disappointed late in the game, like you said, they all went cold, except for Schroeder. Schroeder really stepped up during the fourth quarter. I think at one point he had assisted or scored on like 14 of the past 16 points scored in the fourth. And that either goes to show that we really sucked or he did really well. And I think it was, you know, a little bit of both, but really impressed with that aggression, that, you know, tenacity that he attacks the basket with or creates for other people with. You could definitely see himself becoming, you know, more comfortable in the role the past few games. I think starting with Brooklyn, like, he really started to step it up and, you know, just putting up, you know, some standard performances. So I was happy with that. I was happy that the guys fought, you know, the second unit guys fought and secured the W late in the game. So really, really just great stuff from them. Now it's on to AD. Hopefully, you know, he plays tomorrow and we, you know, keep moving up on the standings.
Yeah, just one thing on Schroeder that I wanted to touch on. You kind of mentioned, like, recently, like, he's just becoming more aggressive. And I also see that he's starting to build better chemistry with Andre Drummond in the pick and roll. And that's kind of exciting to see Drummond find his groove and start to develop some chemistry just in time for Bron and AD to come back. They're saying AD is ruled out for tomorrow's game against Utah, is what I last read. So it doesn't sound like he'll be playing, which kind of makes sense because after the Utah game Monday, we have Tuesday, Wednesday off, and then we play Thursday. So this really gives you, gives AD, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, like 3 extra days of rest. And so give him a little extra more rest, a little more extra practice reps. And then maybe he plays in Dallas because we have Dallas Thursday, Saturday, both games in Dallas. So maybe he plays those games. I'm not sure, but I mean, he has to come back eventually. You know, I wish they would have never even reported that there's a probability that he would play, because now we're just like, well, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? But just looking at the standings, we are 1.5 games behind Denver for the 4 seed. We're 2 games ahead of Portland in the 5th seed. And I'm curious to see, can Utah hold on to that 1 seed? Because I believe the Suns are like 1.5 games behind them. And so just, you know, if, so like, let's say Utah falls out of 1 and the Suns overtake the 1 seed. If we stay in that 4-5 range and we win that series, I guess I'm thinking it's going to be Denver or Portland, and we win that series, that means that we would next play the Suns instead of the Jazz, who, frankly, like, I don't care. Give me the Jazz or the Suns. I'm not worried about either of those teams. The only teams that kind of, really the only team that worries me is the Clippers. No other team in the West really concerns me.
The Lakers are going to play the Grizzlies in the first round, and I'm calling it now. They're going to finish with the number one seed. They're going to finish with the number one seed, making a miraculous comeback, only 5.5 out from the Suns. The Jazz, there's no doubt in my mind they're going to blow number one just because, you know, they lost a really good player. There's no doubt in my mind Nuggets are going to keep slipping because, you know, they lost a really good player.
Hey, but they've won, the Nuggets have won 2 games, man. They won their last two without, or at least I think they won their most recent game without Jamal Murray, man. So don't sleep on Jokic. That's the MVP.
That is probably the MVP, to be honest, but I still think the Lakers can overcome not only the 1.5 game difference between, you know, Denver and the Lakers, but also the 5.5 between them and the Suns. With as many games as we have left, it's not crazy to think that, you know, they could drop some and Lakers can make up ground. More likely it'll be they'll finish like in the third seed or something like that. I really think the Jazz are going to start to slip up big time. We'll see though. We'll see.
Yeah, man, we'll see. Today's Sunday. We're recording this on Sunday. And so we have the Jazz again tomorrow. So originally when we made our predictions, I said I thought that the Lakers would go 0-2. You said that you thought they'd go 1-1. So do you think tomorrow, do you think we have another chance at getting another win? Let's say Gobert plays. Let's say Favors play. Let's say Conley plays. So everyone's good to go minus Mitchell. What are your thoughts?
Bro, I already said it at the beginning of the series. It's going to be 1-1.
So you think we lose that?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I agree, man. I think I never thought we were going to win a game. And so we were lucky to win that first one. So I do think we'll take this L. And then, you know, we'll record after that game and then we'll make our predictions for the Dallas Mavericks game. And, you know, that's really all we have for the Lakers. No real updates on Bron and AD. And so hopefully we get an update soon on those guys, especially with this upcoming Dallas series, those back-to-back games in Dallas. So, yeah, that's all we have for you as far as like our Lakers segment. Pretty kind of pretty short and brief. Hopefully we'll have more for you after the Dallas series. But thank you all for tuning in. Thank you for hanging out with us. We appreciate the support. Make sure y'all give us that follow on Twitter at @_cityofchamps. Make sure you subscribe to the pod on Apple Podcasts or, you know, Spotify if you're a Spotify user. Just tune in. If you're listening on Apple Pod, leave those reviews. We appreciate those reviews. Already got some going, so appreciate all the love and support, y'all. Peace.